We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Howdy, howdy. Welcome to the Texas Warbird Report here on warbirdradio.com. I'm your host, Zane Adams. We are here raring to go with a show here. It is March 22nd, 2016, and we've got a good show for you tonight. I've got spring is in the air here in Texas, and airplanes are flying. For those that haven't been paying attention, at least on Facebook, the Air Force One, the Lockheed Constellation known as Columbine II, flew from Arizona to Scott Glover's Mid-America Air Museum up there in Mount Pleasant yesterday, and they had a little problems with fuel and stuff, so they got that fixed today and going to fly it out of there on its way to full restoration shop over in Virginia. And so if you're in the Mount Pleasant area tomorrow about 9 o'clock, don't be surprised to see the beauty of a Lockheed Constellation flying out of there. It was good fun to play, to watch it online yesterday. A buddy of mine, Eric Johnson, was on board a B-25 following along with cameras and rolling. And we look forward to seeing some video from him. And we'll have to get Scott on here shortly to tell us a story about that and some of these other good stuff he's got going on up there at Mount Pleasant. Also around here, Collings Foundation. Of course, our buddies, friends of Warbird Radio, the guys in the Collings Foundation are in town here in the DFW area. They've were in Tyler. They went to Denton, Texas, which is just north of Fort Worth. And they'll be leaving Denton, Texas to fly over to Love Field in Dallas tomorrow. And Love Field stops, always a big stop for them there at the Frontiers of Flight Museum. And they've got the B-25 with them this year. The Huey's with them on the Texas run. The B-17, B-24, of course, that beautiful Mustang is P-51C is on board with them as well on the tour. And, of course, I'm going to go hang out with them Saturday morning and see if I can't volunteer or scrub some airplanes or at least sit around and talk to Buddy Rick Harris and those guys, Jim Harley and all. I know just a few months into their tour, but this is a good stop for them here in Dallas, and the weather looks good. We can just hold the wind down a little bit. It'll be a good time for them over there at Love Field. They're going to leave there, go up to Oklahoma for a couple of days, which we won't hold against them. But then they'll come back, I think, over to Sherman, and then head out west for the rest of their tour and on California Way and such. So it's good fun for them. But tonight we have Lanny Purcell. He's a local guy here with the Cowtown Aircrafters over Prop Wash, Texas, or Prop Wash Airport in Justin, Texas. Lanny, you with us here?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey,
all right.
How you doing,
thanks,
Zane?
I'm doing well, Lanny. Thanks for coming on tonight. I've been wanting to get you on for a while. I know we talked briefly, I guess, last year, and over at the Prop Wash fly-in a couple of years ago, but I'm glad you're on with us tonight. I've been wanting to try to get you on and talk about your little shop up there. You do some amazing work out of that little shop. I first, I guess, heard about you through with Taylor Stevenson at Oshkosh-winning Elberg that you guys worked on together up there and came out of your shop. And so, you know, tell us a little bit about Lanny Purcell and where did you come from in the airplane world?
Okay, well, I appreciate all the kind words. Well, I've had a really good aviation career. and it's not over yet. So, but I'm actually an aeronautical engineer, retired aeronautical engineer out of Lockheed Martin. I was 35 years at Lockheed and retired a couple of years ago. I don't know if you knew that, but I worked on F-16s for 20 years and then the T-50 project for 3 years, and then F-35 for 12 years. And then I retired and was and kind of shifted gears over to taking it easy and enjoying my life with my wife, Carrie, and shifted a little more emphasis over to the old airplane stuff. I've been doing the Warbird business since I was a kid.
Yeah.
My dad, Bob Parcell, kind of got me infected with the disease, so to speak.
Isn't that terrible when that teenager. Happens?
Yeah, no, not really. It's been pretty cool. I've had a lot of fun. My dad grew up in Wichita, Kansas, and was, flying PT-19s when he was in high school.
Ah, there you go.
And then got married and had kids and moved to Texas. And after a few years, he bought an airplane again, and he bought the airplane of his, the love of his life. He bought a PT-19 again, and that's what I learned to fly in. And then I bought my own Fairchild when I was a senior in high school. I mean, it was all in pieces, and I had to put it together. I couldn't afford to buy an airplane that was flying, so I had to put it together, and that's kind of what started the whole thing.
Yeah.
I put mine together, and somebody watched me and said, hey, could you help me with mine? And then, hey, could you help me with this? And before you know it, I almost had a part-time job the whole
best
time.
Best buddies with everybody.
Somebody
huh?
else get started, right?
Yeah. Oh.
So, and that was, and Dad was pretty big in the CAS. This is back in the 70s and the early 80s. So I was the little kid that was kind of running around behind the scenes, so to speak, learning about all this stuff and really, really getting to hang out with some great people that really influenced my life. So then I basically just kept going with that, and it just kept, it was more like a snowball rolling down the hill. I don't know if I was really in control or not, but.
Well, that's the way it
continued, just taking on one project after another.
That's kind of the way it goes sometimes. You happen into things in life, and being an engineer at Lockheed, I guess, gives you some foundation, but it doesn't do well with fabric covered airplanes. So.
No, but it was almost. See, I was thinking about it today, kind of preparing myself for this. I was thinking about it today, but one of the things that it did do. Because I did everything on the F-16. I started out on the assembly line, shooting rivets, and then worked, and then graduated to be a manufacturing engineer and figured out how to tool things for mass production. And then I shifted gears and went off into design engineering and design things, and ended up being a project engineer on the F-35. And I was thinking about it, and one of the things that it taught me was not be intimidated by a big project, if that makes sense, because it's really just like, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. So somebody will show up with a truckload of parts and spill them out on the hangar floor, and it's like, well, this is a Waco taper wing. It's like, okay, I see that.
Yeah.
And I'm not intimidated by the fact that we're all the way down to nothing.
Right.
Because in my career, we started with nothing. We started with big billets of aluminum or a blank piece of paper, and we figured out how to make airplanes.
Right.
So I think that actually gives me a little bit of an edge, because there's always a way to do it. They did it once. You can do it again.
Sure. Well, it brings you, and I guess working in the Lockheed environment gives you a meticulous step-by-step process of doing everything as well. You got to have it right. You got to do it right, because you're putting this on the line for the company and for the government and for the guys that are going to fly it. So, I can see that.
Yeah. Well, back in the day at Lockheed, it was all about the warfighter, and that was our, there were big banners hanging up in the factory, and that was our battle cry, so to speak. was that, you know, your grandson's going to fly this thing someday, because we
right.
build airplanes to last 30 years these days. So there you go. It's a whole mentality of it, and it's safety and quality first. But, you know, if you spin that off into the old airplane business, then it twists off into the accuracy and the anal retentive detail of restoring something that was built in the 20s or 30s or 40s, which is the kind of stuff that I really like to do.
Right. And speaking of the older stuff, you guys last year put together a Travelair 2000, is that what it was, right?
It was a 5000.
Travelair 5000.
Yeah. That was probably one of my most challenging projects that I've done, because and you can find it on the internet in the history of the airplane, but it started out life as an airliner. Eamon Carter convinced National Air Transport, NAT, to start a run to Fort Worth, Texas. And this particular Travelair 5000 was the first airliner to land in Fort Worth, Texas. And the 5000 was built purposely as an airliner, and there weren't very many airplanes in 1927 that were designed to haul people. Most of them were pleasure craft or airmail airplanes,
right.
And they happened to have a couple extra seats.
Yeah.
This airplane
airliner in this guys is what, four or five, maybe six seats?
It was designed for six, but NAT. Only had four seats in it, because they had to haul the mail too, because I think back in the day it was all government subsidized by mail runs, commercial airmail,
right.
And passengers.
Sure.
But this airplane was this particular airplane was flown back and forth from Chicago to Fort Worth, and then the run was so lucrative and so successful that they quickly upgraded to Ford tri-motors, and the Travelers were obsolete. So NAT gave the airplane to Eamon Carter, and Eamon took it home and parked it in his front yard as lawn art, basically.
Yeah.
And it effectively melted into the ground, and when it got to be an eyesore, he drug it off into the trees, and it dilapidated to just rusty fittings. And in 1977, a guy named Harry Harman found the airplane, discovered it, and talked the Carter family out of it, and he started the restoration. And he worked on it for 30 years and did a great job. But effectively, he got the steel tubing fuselage rebuilt and most of the wing. The woodwork on the wing, the big stuff, the spars. Because
yeah.
This is a 52 foot span wingspan airplane.
Yeah, it's a big airplane.
Machine.
Yeah,
it's a big machine for 200 horsepower.
Right.
And it had a Wright J5 on it. Yeah.
Of course, it's not an airworthy restoration. It's a
museum
restoration.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, the detail we had was four black and white pictures of what a Travelair 5000 looked like, and we had a steel tubing fuselage sitting on a trailer deck.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we started.
Right. Well, and you get an airplane like this, there's only 10 of them built.
Right.
You know, and
two of those were racers. The Woolaroc and the Oklahoma were racers, so there's only eight airliners built.
Yeah.
And out of all of the 10, the Woolaroc, as you may know, is up in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and then this one that's in downtown Fort Worth.
That's it. The lone survivors there. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've
seen it hanging. And those folks that aren't Fort Worth centric for them, but Eamon Carter was a big deal around Fort Worth. Newspaper guy. Champion of the city. These kinds of things. Eamon Carter was.
He started
the first radio and TV station around here, and those kinds of things. So Eamon Carter was a big deal for Fort Worth, they've got a museum in the old Star Telegram building. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. That was
put
kind of his corporate headquarters.
Right. And it's hanging from the ceiling in that museum now. And you can see it from the street outside looking through the windows and hanging over the old cars and other things in there. It's a beautifully done restoration, beautiful airplane. And that electric blue paint job, it's a great looking airplane.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It came out really well. It really did. And we're very proud of it.
And it's a funky airplane because the pilot's a single pilot, right? Sitting up high, right. Kind of sticking out of the top of the wing. And it's a nifty airplane for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool history, and I can go on and on about that, but I got to put a little personal anecdote in it. Travel Air, as many people know, and maybe some people don't know, Travel Air was in Wichita, Kansas, and it was the airplane company in the 20s in Wichita.
Right.
It was Clyde Cessna, Lloyd Stearman, Walter Beach, and Herb Rodden were the four guys that founded Travel Air Aircraft. And then when the stock market crashed, everybody went broke. And make a long story short, they all, by the way, there's a lot of drama in there too, if you read the book, they all split up, went across the street, almost literally across the street, and started their own airplane companies, which was Stearman, Cessna, Beach, and Rodden Brothers Aircraft. Herb Rodden was the chief designer for a while at Travel Air. He had a brother, Gene Rodden, that my dad worked for in Wichita, Kansas, when he was in high school. His best friend was Lanny Rodden, which is my namesake.
Ah, well, there you go.
I'm actually kind of connected to the Travel Air in a strange kind of way.
Yeah, that is fortuitous that you'd come that airplane falls in your lap later on in life. That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, very cool. That's very cool.
Well, that was a cool project.
Yeah. Yeah. At your shop, the last time I was over there, it's full of L5 parts and L5 airplanes in various states. And how did you get to kind of be the L5 guy around town?
Well, it kind of happened by accident, which is kind of the way most of this stuff is.
Right.
I actually was a Fairchild guy. My dad infected me with the Fairchild bug a long time ago, and I had a PT-26 that I rebuilt in the early 80s, and there was a lot of woodwork involved, and some guy showed up one day and said, hey, I got an L5, and it needs some woodwork done to it, and he brought it to us, and we got started on that one, and he said, I don't think I want any more, do you want to buy it? And so we thought, well, that might be kind of cool, so we bought the L5. And then somebody else came along and said, I got an L5 that needs help. And then I started looking for parts. And I bought a big stash of stuff out of Minnesota that was like a Civil Air Patrol supply depot or something like that. And got a lot of stuff from them. And then it just kept snowballing. So I ended up at one time I had five projects and a warehouse full of parts. And I've turned most of those into airplanes over the years. I've actually got two in the shop right now that are under what I call an active restoration. And that'll be number 15 and number 16 for our shop as far as airplanes that we've done ground-up restorations on.
Wow.
So we've built quite a few. And I kind of joke about it. I can pick up one little part and I can tell you exactly what the part number is and exactly where it goes on the airplane.
Your handy guy to have around.
It's kind of fun. The one I'm doing right now is for a customer in Mississippi, and it's actually an 062. And if you know the history of the L-Birds, which kind of ties into what's going on at Oshkosh this year, you know, this year one of the themes for the Warbirds of America is the 1941 Louisiana Maneuvers, which is touted as the birthplace of the grasshopper concept, because that's when they put the Cubs and the Taylor Crafts and the Aeronicas up against the O-47s and the O-52 Owls and those type of airplanes and put them in combat scenarios, and they decided that the light planes were a better solution.
Yeah, kind of like a militarily. Live trials there going on.
Yeah, they competed them, the two together, and the O-47s and the O-52s got shot down by the fighters, so to speak, but the grasshoppers at treetop level, you know, got the mission accomplished, so they shifted gears and got away from the big airplanes and went with the light stuff. And as they did that, they decided, well, you know what we're going to do? We need something a little better, because everything they competed with was a civilian airplane that was painted green, basically, you know.
Right.
So they decided we need a purpose-built liaison airplane, and that's where the L-5 came from. Because the only other one before that was the Stinson L-1, and that was kind of the U.S. version of a Fiesel Stork, because they were watching what was going on in Europe, and
right.
and the Germans were having success with the Stork, so they designed something like that, but it was still mighty big airplane.
Sure.
So yep. they ended up with the O. They ended up ordering the O-62, which was kind of halfway between the Cub and an L-1. So the Cub's a 800-pound airplane, and an L-1's a 2,500-pound airplane, and the L-5's a 1,500-pound airplane. And then before they actually delivered the first L-5, or the first O-62, I should say, they changed the concept and switched everything over to L's instead of O's. So this this one airplane I'm building right now, it's actually an original O-62. It's one of the first lot airplanes that was built in 1942, early 42, started out as an O-62 and then redesignated as an L-5. And they look the same on the outside, but there's a lot of differences on the inside. Because I'm sure Stinson probably said, well, we're going to build 275 of these and then we're going to be done. And when the military said, this is exactly what we want, we want 1,500 more of these, they said, we can't build them like that. We've got to change things to make them faster.
So, right.
And I can see it as a manufacturing engineer. Yeah, there's no castings, for example, in an O-62. Everything's welded. The rudder pedals, just the pedal, the rudder brake pedal, is 17 parts all welded together. And
wow.
on the second lot airplane, there are castings. But this particular airplane that we're doing now is what I call an anatomically correct O-62 with all the little welded pieces in place and that kind of
cool.
stuff.
So, well, that's cool. That's cool.
It's crazy detail, and I'm probably the only one that appreciates it, but that's what floats my boat.
Well, I mean, that's what makes and nowadays, I was reading in the EAA magazine, I think it was, about what makes a restoration. It was one magazine here recently, and on all these old airplanes, and it's more and more the difference in as far as quote competing at Oshkosh and Reno and those kind of places. It's these small details that you drill down into to get the airplanes correct for period, and as original as possible in those ways, you know, flight safety notwithstanding, but you know, all the rest of it. And
right.
it's that kind of knowledge and that kind of research and work that goes into the airplanes that makes them unique and makes them what they are,
it's kind of caught up with the consumer car business when head stamps on bolts and the kind of jacket that's on the wiring is makes the difference between a winner and a loser.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and otherwise we'd all be running around with, you know, army painted 172s and be happy. But
yeah.
you know. So yeah. Well, it's and you've got a great group of guys over there. I know my buddy Gerald Asher works with you over there some. And
Gary and Tom Swindle and Brad Houston and Doug Folk. We got a pretty good group of guys. I mean, it's kind of our advantage for this shop is we got a wide berth of talent, and mixed with some new guys that we're training up. But everybody's kind of part time.
Right.
So our overhead is low, so I think it makes us competitive, so to speak.
Sure.
You know, and we've had a really good year. Usually in the wintertime, the restoration business kind of winds down, but one of our specialties is wood and fabric work. We do a lot of that, and the fabric shop has been busy all winter long.
Oh, good. Good. Well, tell us a little bit about your the Ryan that you've got there, that little beautiful silver and red
Ryan,
machine.
The Ryan STA.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a dream airplane of mine from when I was a little kid, because that's just sexy. There's nothing.
Guaranteed.
There's no other way to describe it. That's just sexy. Matter of fact, one of the little kids that lives on the field, that's what he calls it. He runs out and yells, "Look, Mommy, sexy's flying."
Well, and you brought that back from I guess it had crashed and flipped on its back. Is that right? And
yeah, it came out of the factory and stayed in California. They were all built in Southern California, and I don't remember exactly who it went to right after it was, you know, came out of the factory. It got, the records are really vague, and I'd like to find some information on it. But it went to some university in California and did a CPT kind of thing during the war. Because I've got the documents that shows that the and the term leaves me right now, the reclamation agency, the guys that the agency that sold surplus aircraft. I've got the receipt in the records of it being surplus military. And then it was in New Jersey at the time it sold. And it came back to California, and that guy flew it around and ran it out of gas and did a forced landing in Nevada and put it over on its back. And we have pictures of it. It's a large format negative, and probably from a newspaper or something. It's probably the biggest news in the little town or something. But
right.
Anyway, we got pictures of it. It went through a ditch and cleaned the gear up underneath of it and went over on its back and crushed the vertical fin and they took it apart and put it in a barn. And then we jumped to 1977. The guy we got it from, or the estate of the guy we got it from, he found it in that barn. It's like they took it apart, put it in the barn, and it sat there from 1948 until 1977.
Which is amazing in itself.
And he spent several years rebuilding it. The guy's name was Don Carter, and he was a pretty famous antique airplane collector out of Shellville in the Napa Valley area there in California. And there's several good books around that have pictures of this airplane flying with the other three that were on the field. There's three STAs on that one airport, which is rare as heck. But
yeah.
Anyway, Mark Todd and I ended up making a deal with the family and brought the airplane back to Texas and put it together, and we've had it flying for 2 years now. And it's a wonderful little airplane. It's really amazing, because a lot of people think about Orion and they go, well, that's a PT-22, and there's a lot of difference. So, matter of fact, the only thing that's the same between a STA and a PT-22 is it's got flying wires that holds the wings off. Everything else is different.
It's got a different tail. It's got different cowling. It's got different wings.
It is a beautiful
airplane. I mean, just amazing.
The basic airplane, to give you a good example, because, you know, basically they took the military bought STAs, and they said, this thing flies too nice. This is not going to work for us. We need to train people to fly PT-13s and T-6s and then go on to Mustangs or P-40s or something.
Right.
So this thing doesn't have any bad habits. We have to change it. So they swept the wings back. Because the STA's got straight leading edge wings, and the PT-22, they're swept back, I think it's almost 10 degrees, which makes it stall ugly. And then they militarized it for military training, which they made basically means they beefed everything up. So to give you a basic example, the STA is 130 horsepower Minesco engine. It weighs 900 pounds empty. PT-22 is 155 horse Kenner, and it weighs 1,900 pounds empty.
Yeah,
it's 1,000 pounds heavier than an STA. An STA weighs 200 pounds more than a J3 Cub.
Is that all? Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder Mark Todd has that silly grin on his face when he's flying the thing.
Yeah. He's the selfie king, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. It looks like fun. Of course, you know, me being 6'1" heavy dude, ain't no way I'm ever fitting in a thing. I think my shoulders are.
You know,
people were
a lot smaller back when that airplane was designed. I mean, I'm 5'10", weigh 175 pounds, and I put the thing on. It's a tight fit.
Yeah, even if I was high school weight. I don't think I could fit in the darn thing. I'm too broad. You know? It's a cool looking airplane. So,
well, we're gonna have it out and about and flying it around May 7th for the Cowtown Aircrafters open house fly-in that we have every
and
year.
That,
you mentioned it a little earlier.
Yeah. That thing is that's quite the shindig. You guys have hot rod clubs out there. You've got live bands.
Yeah.
You got food, you've got airplanes, you got flying going on, all kinds of hangar dance in the evening. It's quite the event.
We call it the USO style dance, and it's kind of your typical deal. It's a 21 piece Glenn Miller style big band. They're sitting in the back of the hangar underneath a big giant American flag, and there's a big group of reenactors and most of us here at Cowtown, we all put on Air Corps uniforms. And then we got another group that Carrie, my wife, and I are members of the Fort Worth Swing Dance Club. So we have the swing dance guys there, and there's some professional swing dancers that come out and put on a show. So it's very entertaining, and it's pretty much open to the aviation public, and there's no gate.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I know it's great fun, and it's an all day thing. I was out there, I guess, when I came out that first time, you know, I was out there early, like 10, 11 o'clock, and there was all kinds of flying going on, all you know, and stuff. And I was wore out by 5 o'clock. It's you guys keep going on into the night there. So
yeah.
That's May 7th for anybody who wants to fly their Warbird, their old airplane, any kind of airplane, basically. In there to Prop Wash Airport. What's the identifier on Prop Wash?
16X-ray,
just north of Fort Worth in Justin, Texas. And it's a good time. And you're going to have, that's what I'm going to talk to Ryan here about in a few minutes, but the National Airbird Gathering is what it's what you're calling it in North Texas. And you guys have got some military vets or some World War II vets that are apparently going to show up and be there. And how many ever L-Birds are showing, I don't know if you've got a number on that yet or not. But
really have a hard number. You know, it's all very weather-dependent for all the listeners out there. It's very weather-dependent.
Yeah, and I know last year's was weathered out. It was a pretty nasty raw weekend, so.
Well, the band still played.
There you go.
Yeah,
the band plays
Gary
on.
Gary and I got married in the hangar. Right before the band started up, so it was
that's right.
We matched our wedding and the fly-in together, but the fly-in part got rained out. But we weren't going to let the wedding get rained out. So.
Oh, of course not. Of course
not. It was a fabulous time and the highlight of my life.
Well, good. That's cool. One other thing for you before we get to Ryan and let you go here, but you created quite a stir. At Oshkosh at AirVenture this last year, with your bright and shiny and black and yellow T6, tell us a little bit about that airplane because it's spectacular.
We call it Madness, and that was kind of a nickname that came about from deciding that we were going to polish an airplane as big as a T6. But I have actually owned that airplane since the mid '80s, but it was piled up in a warehouse. And when Mark Todd bought his T6 and brought it into our shop, the juices got to kind of flow, and it's like, man, this thing's a lot of fun. We should get one of these. And Doug looked at me and goes, well, we got one already. It's like, oh, yeah. So, and we dusted it off, and we didn't turn a wrench on anything else until that thing flew, basically. But, it really came out nice. And for the people that haven't seen it, it's all polished bare metal with yellow and black chevrons on the tail and the yellow leading edge on the cowling.
Yeah.
And it is polished. Everything's polished. Good.
Yeah.
And we had the advantage on that airplane because it was all in pieces. So I jigged up the wings, and we did a lot of work on that. We reskinned the leading edges of the wings. We reskinned the side panels, part of the cowling. The canopy was all new, a lot of new old stock parts on that airplane because I was determined I was going to have a nice looking polished bare metal airplane. And then once we reskinned everything, we polished everything in the jigs before we even put the airplane together. So
there you go.
The bottom of the airplane is polished. You don't see very many T6s that are polished on the bottom. Well, we did it when it was still in the wing fixtures and in the
that is a
section fixtures.
That is a bit of madness there. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a little crazy. But.
Well, it's a sunglasses required airplane for sure. It's spectacular.
Exactly.
It is nice.
Yeah.
I have to give
Jim Cavanaugh and Doug Jeans and Chuck Gardner a plug for that, because at Oshkosh, for those that may have seen it, you know, they had a setup there right by where you guys were at. You guys
right.
were set up at Oshkosh uh-huh. in the restoration station, I think they called it.
Right.
Which is kind of stage center, and Jim invited us to show madness off Saturday, all day Saturday out there. So we got to park the airplane stage center and open it up and let everybody look at it.
Well, during the week, I was walking the T6 line a couple of times during the week, and there was always a crowd around your airplane. Whether you were there or not, there was always a little bundle of people mm-hmm. around with their cameras and oohing and aahing on your airplane. So
there wasn't much grass left around where we were parked.
And there's a reason for it. It's a great looking airplane, Lanny, and I'm glad you got it up flying. It's nicely done, and beautiful looking machine. So,
well, I appreciate that. We had a lot of fun doing it, and we're very proud of it.
Well, cool.
It's kind of our signature now.
Well, it's a good one to have. It's a good one to have. All right, Lanny. Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight, and I look forward to seeing you up at ProcBosch in May, and I'll come up and say hi and at least, have a hot dog and maybe a fuzzy beverage of some sort, but we'll for sure come by and say hi. And those of you out there that are looking for somebody to work on your wood and fabric airplane, check out Cowtown Aircrafters. You guys are on Facebook, of course, and
yes.
of course you can be found in the yellow pages, of course, I guess, somewhere. But airplane to be a good hands up there with Lanny. So thanks, Lanny, for coming on tonight. And we're going to take a quick break here and get to our next guest, Ryan Short, here shortly.
We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman & Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Welcome back to the Texas Warbird Report here on warbirdradio.com. Our next guest, that was Lanny Purcell, of course, from Fort Worth, Texas. And our next guest here is Ryan Short. Ryan, you here with me on the line?
I'm here.
Hey, welcome to the Texas Warbird Report. I know you've been on the line here with us before, but welcome and to our tech-centric show. And you're one of the good Texas guys we'd like to have on here. And you guys, I was talking to Lanny there a little bit, and I guess you're familiar with ProcBosch Airport, and you got a little event fixing to happen up that way. Tell us a little bit.
Well, I'm not as familiar with ProcBosch as I'd like to be, but I'm about to get familiar with it. Had an interest in liaison aircraft and warbirds for a long time, and got involved with the Alamo Liaison Squadron down in San Antonio, and was with them for a number of years, hosted a number of L-bird gatherings down there, and
that's a commemorative Air Force squadron, right?
Not anymore, actually. They've been
An
independent unit for a number of years now.
Okay.
So moved up here to Dallas for work, and was thinking about, you know, kind of missing my L5 that I got to fly down there, and started looking around, joined the CAF out in Lancaster, and ended up talking to Lanny quite a bit. And so I started messaging each other and said, you know, hey, why don't we get another L-Bird gathering together? So that's kind of how this started. I like to try to bring together a lot of the liaison aircraft that are in the area and anywhere that pilots are willing to travel from around the country to come in, and try to just get stories and talk about the aircraft and just kind of highlight what never gets highlighted at all the big air shows, which is the mission, the role, and the success that the liaison aircraft had during World War II.
Yeah. Well, and beyond, of course. I mean, but
right.
And a lot of people don't, you know, I know as a kid, the only time I ever saw an L-Bird or even, you know, thought about it was in the, what was it, in the, oh, golly, in the movie, the Battle of the Bulge movie. They went up flying a Piper Cub looking for German artillery and such. And Henry Fonda, I think, was in the backseat of that. And so, you know, I mean, that's just a little, you know, taste that most anybody, I guess, gets on the L-Bird history. And but there was a whole lot of these.
I remember seeing that as a kid. And then when I was getting my pilot's license, a friend of mine said, hey, you need to go check out this little place outside of San Antonio. And ended up going down there, getting my table endorsement with a friend, and then flying with them. And it was just amazing. I was like, wow, I didn't even know all this existed. And the Alma Liaison Squadron was where Bill Stratton and Hardy Cannon, who were two of the big pioneers to research and document what happened with the liaison pilots. And so I, you know, came into a lot of information at my fingertips all of a sudden about what all they did during World War II.
Yeah, and it's an amazing history, even, you know, and everybody thinks about, you know, Europe and everything, but, you know, they flew those things off of boats and in the Pacific and caught them on hooks. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just crazy things they did with those airplanes that today everybody looks sideways at. But it was a necessary part of the support of the war, and you know, spotters and ambulance and all kinds of things. Before helicopters, these are the only airplanes that could get into some places.
That's very true. And actually, you know, when you think about it, it started off pretty much the same role in World War One with observer aircraft, and it carried on into Korea and into Vietnam, and even today, basically the same role that UAVs are now playing.
Yeah, and it's I know the L-5 in particular, it's a little heavier airplane than, say, the L-4, the Cub and the Taylor Craft and those things, the L-2. But the L-5's got room for a litter in the back to carry a guy. And, you know, you've flown the L-5 quite a bit. Tell us about flying the airplane. I know it's a little more than just your average Cessna.
It is. The Stinson L-5 is a fun airplane. I've flown L-4, J-3 equivalents, the L-2. I've flown once in an L-3, I think, with down Alma Liaison Squadron. The L-5 was kind of my favorite, and it was favored by the Air Force, the Army Air Force, as opposed to the Army Ground Forces, because they always like bigger, stronger, faster, heavier.
Sure.
And that's why they ended up purchasing more of them. The Army ends up using more of the Piper L-4 Grasshopper. The Stinson L-5 is a pretty chunky airplane. It's got a big six-cylinder engine on it, and it sounds and feels like a heavier, bigger airplane, yet it's actually very sweet to handle it on the ground. It's got big, huge Oleo struts, and when you touch down, they just absorb the impact, and they make it easy to make a fairly gentle landing, which I can imagine would be very useful, especially when they were carrying structure cases. One of the guys that I wish was still with us, went to a lot of our events down at Cannon Field in the Wings Over Houston, was a guy named L.D. Todd, and he actually flew with the 163rd Liaison Squadron on Okinawa, and they received a unit citation for the number of men that they actually rescued from the front lines on roads right behind the front lines there in Okinawa. One of the amazing things they would do is they would land under fire on this road, pick up a stretcher case and take them back. That same mission would probably take something like 30 minutes. by ambulance or even up to 2 hours, and they could get them back in 10 minutes or so.
Yeah. And everybody thinks airfield or battlefield aerial evacuation started in Korea with the helicopters, but those guys did a tremendous amount of work with the L-Birds, of course. And I'm glad you're highlighting them because there is stories to be told there. And I know you're supposed to. I know plans are you're supposed to have a couple of veterans at the gathering. To tell us a little bit about who they are.
Right now, I only have one confirmed, although I'm working on more, and I'm asking anybody that's out there that knows of liaison pilots that are still alive from World War II to let me know. But I'm also inviting anyone from Korea, Vietnam, if you're a liaison pilot or an O pilot, like an O-1, O-2, come on out, participate. You mentioned the movie Battle of the Bulge. The gentleman we have who's scheduled to attend, his name is Paul Harrington, and he is actually one of the few pilots who actually was flying during the Battle of the Bulge and actually was, I believe, airborne when they started rolling across the American lines. Wow. And he helped during the most desperate part of the battle to keep eyes on where the Germans were doing, where they were, and to help direct artillery fire onto them. And so it'll be really exciting to have him there and hopefully have him just tell us some about his experiences and also answer some questions for people if they want to ask. I'm hoping that around 2 o'clock, or depending on whenever he's able to and feels good enough, we'll have a sort of a roundtable discussion, question and answer time during the day.
Sure. Well, cool. Well, I look forward to seeing that. Hope he makes it, and hope the weather holds, and you guys get a bunch of airplanes. Do you have any idea right now how many airplanes are planning on coming? They want to come.
Well, I've heard of about 6 or 8 L5s that could potentially be there. Lanny's got 2. I've got a friend in San Antonio that's got 1, who said he would maybe come if he can. Jerry Patterson, who was Warbird enthusiast as well, and the former Texas Railroad Commissioner, and he's got an L5 and he may or may not come. Yeah. That would be 4 right there. I'm trying to see if some of the guys from the Alamo Liaison Squadron can bring up 2 that they have on the field. That'd be 6, and I've heard there's another 5 or so within striking distance. So it'd be really, it's within the realm of possibility to have 10 or so, and we're trying to reach out to the L4 pilots as well. I think we have something like 6 or 8 of them in Texas that are flyable. Looking for an L3. There are some L2s around. Haven't got them committed yet, but working on it. I talked to Kermit Weeks in Florida about his L1, but he's not wanting to fly that far in the aircraft. So,
yeah, well, that's it. that's a long way to run it for sure. And I mean, none of these airplanes are fast for sure. So,
right, the L1's actually an amazing aircraft, big, huge, aircraft, and they did actually serve in North Africa as well as the Burma India Theater, and they did pretty good work. They were a little bit more weak on their landing gear. Kermit's got 1. I think there's 1 in Alaska. I'm not sure which one it is. I think it's the one in Alaska. It used to be owned by the Alamo Liaison Squadron. And I remember as a kid seeing it, and they actually one time at Stinson did a slow race between a Storch and the L1, trying to see which one would, the L1, to see which one would cross the finish line last.
That's funny. Well, I think there's an NE, I think it's an NE2 that... lives at Arlington Municipal Airport, or at least used to. I may have the guy's name around here somewhere. I'll have to, if I find that, I'll have to put that in your hands and see if you can get him, because it's painted up and it's navy blue. And I know I was out there one day and he was taking it out, and he said that it was that airplane's 60th birthday, I think. So he was going to take it out and fly it. And I'll have to, I'll have, see if I can't dig up that name. I just now thought about that, trying to think about L-birds in the area. So, and it's an actual Navy version of the L-4. So, but yeah.
Okay. That'd be great. Any of the O-1 operators out there, they're welcome. Any of the Korean aircraft, the Navion, the L-5, L-16, all those are...
You'll even take those. Well, you'll even take those bird dog guys.
Yeah, and even the O2s. Unfortunately, one of our local O2s can't come because she's committed to the Temple Air Show. But we'll welcome any of them that want to come too. And honestly, it's open to aircraft of any type. It's not a fly-in technically. It's more of a gathering.
Right.
If you want to fly in to prop wash, that's great. It's not like. A big contest or anything, though. It's mainly focused on, you know, looking at the liaison aircraft, talking about them, and of course fly in from anywhere, come hang out. We should have some food truck, at least one food truck, maybe more there. We're going to maybe play a DVD called Elberg, the little plane that did. And as Lanny mentioned beforehand, there'll be a big band in the evening.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's quite a party, and you haven't been out there, it is, it's a great time. It's a great little airfield, a little private airstrip, prop wash is. And it's, that gathering is, or that gathering that fly in is fun, fun to hang around and be there. I know the local EAA chapter kind of runs the ramp, the hot ramp, so to speak. And, they do a good job on that. And, you know, they've always got plenty of food, plenty of music. And it's a great family atmosphere. You'll enjoy it, Ryan. It's a lot of fun to be there.
I'm sure I will. It's always been fun running the Element Liaison Squadron events, and they actually have one coming up on the 23rd of April. If anyone listening is down in San Antonio, they'll be doing their normal thing at Cannon Field. They usually have, and I don't know, we may end up doing this at Prop Wash, but they usually have a Elbert demonstration where they fly some aircraft, and they often do a stretcher loading on one of the L-5s, kind of an ambulance version demo, and often have some other fun things going on, like the flower bombing and spot landing contest. So it's always a fun day, always fun for the kids, and pretty enjoyable experience.
All right, that's at Stinson Field, right?
No, that's at Cannon Field.
Oh, Cannon Field, that's right, that's right.
Wexler.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, in this gathering, we're talking about the National Air Board Gathering. Anybody out there listening that has an L bird and would like to jump on board the Liaison Aircraft History and Preservation Facebook page, I guess you can reach him on there, or then look up National L bird Gathering there on Facebook as well. And that is May 7th, 2016. It's a Saturday. It's a good time by all. And, Ryan, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I know we're a little short here, went a little long with Lanny there, but Lanny's got stories to tell. We could probably talk to Lanny for a couple hours. He's a good guy, and
all right.
And and I'm glad you're up here in the North Texas. We're gonna have to get together for lunch or dinner sometime, Ryan. I know you just lived right down the road from us here, so we'll have to get together. And be careful. You fly just about every day doing aerophotography stuff, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like doing liaison aircraft work. It's kind of funny taking pictures of stuff, and kind of also have tried to preserve some of what I've learned. And I actually am in the middle of rebuilding www.elbirds.com. That's LBIRDS.com. And hopefully we'll have a page up next week or two, or maybe three, with some more of the information about the event.
Cool. Yeah, that is your site, too. That's a great site. There's a lot of cool information on there. And lbirds.com. So yeah, well, Ryan,
it's actually a little busted right now, but it'll be better soon. So.
Okay, I haven't been over there in a while, but I'll believe you. And I appreciate you coming on tonight, and we will see you around town, at least at the gathering there for sure. So thanks for coming on tonight.
That's
Ryan.
Great.
All right, that was Ryan Short here, local Texas guy. here on the Texas Warbird Report. That is May 7th, 2016 at the Prop Wash Airport. The Prop Wash Party is going to be happening. That's at Justin, Texas. We're just north of Fort Worth. So, Lanny, I'd like to see you there. If you want to fly your airplane in there, come out and hang out with some airplane-type people. It's always good fun, good band going, and food, family. It's a great time. So bring your lawn chair and hang out and hang out with the aerocentric folks. But thank you for coming and joining us here on Warbird Radio at the Texas Warbird Report. Really appreciate you being here. And as always, thank you to our troops. Say thank you to our service members out there that are putting it on the line to protect us every day. And we appreciate, and we're here for you guys anytime. So thanks again. Once again, this is St. Adams signing off with the Texas Warbird Report.